Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. Last month, the Union of Concerned Scientists published a new report called Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. In the report, experts cataloged a wide range of policy changes that specifically undermine the health and safety of children today and in the future. They focus on things like lead exposure, schools and childcare facilities located near contaminated sites, weaker air pollution rules, and defective children's products. Joining us to talk about this report are two guests. Jenna Reed is lead science and policy analyst at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Jenna's research focuses on how politics and corporations influenced science-informed decisions making to ensure our local and national policies are based on rigorous, independent scientists. Science. In the report, Jenna writes, quote, "Parents like me want to be able to protect their kids, and we should be able to trust that the federal government is making smart decisions about their health and safety. The health of our country's children should come first, but the Trump administration is placing political and financial interests ahead of the needs of future generations," end quote. Hi, Jenna. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me today.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Gretchen Goldman, Research Director for the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Gretchen leads research efforts focused on the role of science in public policy, and her work has been published in many publications, including Nature and the New York Times, and Gretchen is also a mom. Hi, Gretchen. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, great to have both of you. Since you both have done extensive research on the Trump administration's assault on science and scientists, I just want to ask you first about the coronavirus. And we decided that every day we're going to give people an update just to keep people aware of what's going on. Johns Hopkins has excellent information about the latest numbers. And right now we've got 111,362 confirmed cases, over 62,000 recovered, and 3,892 deaths. So I just wonder, what are your thoughts on the Trump administration's attacks on science and how this is affecting the coronavirus response? Jenna, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So, yeah, this administration, we have been tracking it over the past few years and have noticed that there have been over 130 different attacks on science, as we've termed it, which really has equated to things like censoring scientists or failing to listen to the advice of its own scientists, interfering in the science policy process in some way, disbanding advisory committees that are key to, you know, thinking through complex issues like invasive species or the marine protection areas across the country. And what has been happening with the government's response to coronavirus is a clear lack of due attention to the scientists and experts who should be really at the forefront of communications and discussion about how the public can make sure to reduce the spread of this in virus. And instead, the administration, you know, has put Vice President Mike Pence in charge of the response to coronavirus and has been limiting the ability for public health experts to get the word out about how people can really practice prevention, the prevention that we really need to be prepared for the effects of this virus on health. And so this is, I think, the response to coronavirus has kind of been what we've been expecting from this administration, which is a failure to listen to its own scientists, a failure to really respond to science advice and take important precautions that must be taken to address these complex issues that affect our health and safety.
Tom Frieden, who led the response to the Ebola outbreak in 2014 as CDC director under President Obama told Politico, quote, "In emergencies like this, one of the things that's really important is that you base decisions on science. Candid, be accurate. People are scared. The markets are crashing. It's an unprecedented epidemic, a pandemic, actually." That's what he said. And so can you speak to that, just the role of the scientific and medical community at this time and how important it is to ensure that they let the public know what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, this is an important time for full transparency, for updates from medical and health professionals, as you know, as much as it will take to ensure that people have the information they need to protect themselves and their families. And there should be absolutely no political interference. This is a dire health issue that we need to be addressing. People need access to the information that will help keep them safe, and this administration needs to let that information get through.
Gretchen, what would you add?
Yeah, I think coronavirus is actually the perfect example of why this matters, why it matters that we have a functioning scientific enterprise in the government, why we allow scientists to speak to the public and the media, and why we need to make sure that we do have strong scientific integrity at agencies, which Jenna and I work on across subject areas. But we're seeing right now exactly what's at stake and what is so threatening about what happens when we don't make sure that we give science the spotlight. You know, we now know that the administration was trying to artificially inflate or deflate, rather, the number of cases of coronavirus, and actively avoiding testing people, avoiding bringing cruise ship passengers onto shore, because then the numbers would be higher. And that's very dangerous, that we're seeing a sort of open neglect of science, and that prevents us from having really crucial information about where the virus is, how fast it's spreading, and this prevents our healthcare systems from accommodating it, from limiting the spread, and from the public from having access to that information about them and their families' risks. And so, yeah, I think this just exemplifies perfectly what the problem is, and why we need to insist that our decision makers listen to the experts that know how to address these challenges.
Right. And for people who might not know what you're talking about when you mention Donald Trump and the numbers, Politico has a piece called "Trump's Mismanagement Helped Fuel Coronavirus Crisis." And just to remind everyone, there are more than 3,500 people aboard that ship that is going to dock in Oakland sometime today. On Friday, officials said 46 aboard the ship were tested for the virus, 21 were positive, 19 of them were crew members. And so now we're going to have everyone on that ship tested. And so I'm just reading from Politico. At a CDC press conference on Friday, Donald Trump said, quote, "Do I want to bring all those people off? People would like me to do it. I would rather have them stay on personally. I don't need to have the numbers double because of one ship that wasn't our fault," end quote. And I do want to read a piece of information from the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, because a lot of people were wondering, why is this ship being taken from San Francisco to Oakland? And there was a lot of misinformation spread on social media. So here's what they said. "After careful review of all options, the Port of Oakland was selected as the best site for the ship to disembark. There are limited docks that will be able to dock a ship of that size, and the Port of Oakland location was the easiest to seal off, securely move passengers toward their isolation destinations, and protect the safety of the public." End quote. Jenna, I just wanted to read that because there's so much, right now there's a lot we don't know still. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misinformation being spread.
Right. And, you know, this is why it's really important to have the infrastructure in place for federal agencies like the CDC to be putting out the information that we all need, and for local health departments to get access to that information, spread the word locally. All of this stuff needs to be as easy to get out and publicly spread the information so that misinformation isn't what's spread as an alternative. And so, you know, it's really important also that the administration and President Trump has the same message as the federal agencies like CDC when talking about the efforts that are in place and also the dangers of the virus. So it's really essential that we have a federal government that is looking out for public health, that is practicing prevention and being completely straightforward, transparent, and making sure that everything, all the information is very accessible to everyone who needs it.
Right. And the media are so important right now, especially public media, to act as a public service for the public so we can get this information out. Now, we didn't invite you both to come on to talk about the virus, but thank you for answering some of these questions. We do have a caller, and if you cannot answer, it's fine, because maybe someone else in the coming days can answer it. But I do want to take this caller because he's a Lyft driver, and it's Brian. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
I just want to say, you know, both companies, Uber and Lyft, released a statement, you know, updating us about the virus and what to do, keep our cars clean and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the statement, they say, you know, we don't tolerate any form of discrimination. So if you feel uncomfortable with somebody maybe showing symptoms, I can't deny them service. So that means that, you know, I have to put myself at risk and be stuck in a car, you know, for however long with this person that just decided not to be a responsible person and stay home. And, you know, I just say, you know, if you are, you know, in a confined environment like that, you know, try not to have unnecessary phone calls. Say it if it's necessary. Save it if it's not. And, you know, it's just really upsetting that there's these companies, these for-profit companies, don't put public safety above everything else and just say, you know, this is an emergency and let's, you know, save lives.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in with that. And we're putting together a lot of shows around these questions. There was an Uber driver first confirmed case in Queens. I'm just reading from Patch here. This was on March 9th, and this person is quarantined. Gretchen, any thoughts on Brian, who's a Lyft driver?
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And I think this is that sort of highlights, you know, that we need to be thinking about these decisions carefully when we're putting people at risk. I think we really need to have clear communication coming from leaders. And I think that also brings up points about trust and who has the public trust, because, you know, this is a situation where we don't have a lot of information and we understandably have to make decisions with a limited amount of details. And so we need to make sure that we're protecting people, that there is not, that we are doing things to ensure there isn't racism and other factors that are coming into play when we decide who gets service and who doesn't in this situation. So, and it is going to, I think, have a huge impact, of course, on people's wages and whether or not people are able to do work, and many people, of course, need to go to work to make money for their families. So I think this just goes back to us really needing clear instructions and from information from trusted sources of experts like those at the CDC.
Right. Jenna, anything to add?
You know, one thing I would just add is that the federal government could think through how, you know, provide guidance for different types of companies in our economy and how they should be dealing and responding to the virus, especially ones where, you know, they are, the whole point is interacting with customers, like the restaurant industry, the driving industry, Lyft and Uber. You know, it would be helpful if the government had been prepared for these types of situations already, but now that we are experiencing it, you know, guidance periodically from the government to different sectors would be really useful, and it's something that I hope the administration is really thinking through.
Well, thank you again for that call, Brian, and we will definitely be covering these issues in the coming weeks. Today, we are now, I should say, going to talk about this new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists. The new report is called Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. Jenna Reed is lead science and policy analyst at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Gretchen Goldman is research director for the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union. First off, let's talk about what went on behind the scenes to put this report together? Because as you said, you all have been doing extensive work looking at how the administration has been attacking science. So, Jenna, what went into looking at how this is affecting children specifically?
Right. Yeah. So as I mentioned before, we have this tracker on our website called Attacks on Science, where we've been monitoring the many different ways and tactics the administration has been using to cut science out of the decision-making process. And what we noticed as we were doing that kind of tracking is that many of the examples, unfortunately, stand to really impact the children who are most vulnerable to things like environmental threats or defective children's products that can really damage their health. And so we wanted to call attention to the examples that specifically impact children and their families, and because, you know, it's something that I think all administrations, Republican, Democratic, should be prioritizing kids' health, right? This is our future. This is the next generation and generations to come, and we need to ensure that the next generation has access to clean water and air and safe food and infrastructure so that they can live thriving lives. And so I think it really says a lot about an administration that is time and time again cutting science out of the process, and in doing so, really threatening the children's both immediate health and also long-term, health by rolling back policies or abandoning science.
Gretchen, the report also looked at how the Trump administration has actively hampered the production of new knowledge about how children are uniquely affected by chemical burdens. So can you give us some examples? What do we know at this time, and what don't we know?
Yeah, I think this is one of the more concerning things that we've found, is that it's not only what the administration is doing around policies happening now, but limiting what we could know in the future. We have several examples where we see them cutting out even our understanding of how children are affected. And that's really concerning to me as both a scientist and a mom, because we know that children are uniquely vulnerable to many different kinds of harmful chemicals, and we need to be doing that research now so we know about any emerging threats that are happening, because these, of course, stand to have lifelong impacts on children. So one egregious example from the report was there was a set of children's health-focused research centers across the country that the Environmental Protection Agency was running, and those have been completely shut down by the administration. And these were research centers that it was EPA scientists working with academic partners, so researchers across the country focused on children's health, sharing knowledge, working together, and doing their best to understand threats to children's health from chemicals. This is now lost infrastructure that we don't have anymore, and that poses a threat to what our children, what we know our children are exposed to.
If we change administrations in November, what's the process of bringing that back? Will it be easy and fast, or will it be hard and long?
There's some things that we can try to reverse rather quickly, and there's some things like that will take longer to ramp back up. I think, it certainly will, matter if this is a 4-year or 8-year administration, but I think in some of these things will take a while to walk back. One example is a lot of the air pollution rules that have been weakened or are in the process of being weakened by this administration. Those are things that will take a little while to get through the regulatory process and to fix so that it aligns with the science and what would protect public health. So I think we're going to see many things that we'll need to start sooner rather than later if we want to have policies that use science and protect kids' health.
Jenna, are there any other examples we need to know about in terms of how this administration is hampering the production of new knowledge about how children are affected by chemical burdens?
Yeah, so there's some things that have been happening within the agency. You know, I think we've seen a real attrition of scientists from places like the Environmental Protection Agency, which limits the ability of the agency to do really important work. You know, places like the Office of Research and Development, which is, you know, the agency's science and research arm, where research is being conducted on things like toxic chemicals, like PFAS, for example, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which were used to make Teflon, and now we know have some serious health impacts associated with exposure. You know, those EPA is actively working on some research projects, but, you know, with staff scientists leaving the agency and with an administration that fails to really take an interest in its own scientists and science advice, we are worried that the research that's being done will not be prioritized, and especially on, you know, for the research that's being done on exposures to children, you know, that's really essential work that we need to explore more of these research questions, not less. So that's one piece of this, that where this administration is just failing to prioritize science and failing to prioritize like a pathway for scientists to really look into these important questions.
Jenna, can you also talk about why chemicals and environmental pollutants are particularly harmful to young people?
Sure. So I have a toddler, an 18-month-old, which is a really great example of how kids are just more exposed to environmental contaminants. They are smaller, right? Their exposure per pound is higher for kids. They are growing really fast, so there's so much development happening in the first few years of life, and all of that can be impacted by chemical exposure. They crawl on the floor, right? They put their hands in their mouths. My daughter is a thumb sucker, so there's a lot of interaction between you know, dust and all of the components of dust, so like from household products that can have contaminants that your kid is exposed to and putting into, you know, kind of having exposure through dermal exposure, but also oral exposure. And they also breathe faster, so they can inhale, like air pollution, for example, they can inhale more toxic chemicals and pollutants in a day than adults would. So all of those are just reasons why children are more vulnerable to some of the environmental threats that we face, ranging from lead to asbestos to air pollution, and even things like food contamination, where foodborne illness can really impact a kid more just because their immune system is still developing.
What would you add, Gretchen?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think a lot, too, about, you know, the investment in children mattering more, that we need to, that because they're still developing, some of the impacts can be more lifelong impacts as opposed to, you know, inconveniences as an adult. You know, if we have children that are developing asthma that might not have otherwise, you know, that will have a lifelong impact on their quality of life. And lead exposure is the other, of course, big one, where we know that will have neurological damage that would be permanent, and that's not something we can reverse later. And we also similarly found in the report, we talked about a pesticide, chlorpyrifos, that scientists recommended banning because of its neurological impacts on children, and the administration ignored the scientists and failed to ban it. Some states, including California, have taken efforts to protect people from the pesticide, but that's going to affect a lot of children, and we're not going to be able to repair that.
Gretchen Goldman is Research Director for the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Jenna Reed is Lead Science and Policy Analyst at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union for Concerned Scientists. Jenna and Gretchen are both scientists and they're both moms. And we're talking about the new report called Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. And you can find the report at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we will go in depth and look at the various issues that they focus on, including lead and weaker air pollution rules. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with immigration lawyer Cesar Cotemoc Garcia Hernandez about his new book, Migrating to Prison, America's Obsession with Locking Up Immigrants. Roughly 400,000 people are detained every year while they wait for the result of a civil or criminal immigration proceeding. Hernandez explores the system's origins and outsized presence on private prisons. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're talking about a new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's called Endangering Generations: How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. And today we're joined by two scientists, Jenna Reed and Gretchen Goldman. They are both moms. And if you have a question for them about what they found, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's talk first about lead. In the past couple of years, there's been so much more talk about the harmful effects of lead poisoning on children's health, from damage to the brain and nervous system to slowing down growth and development. Jenna, first off, talk about how the rules and regulations on lead have changed under the Trump administration.
Yeah, so there's been a couple of activities from the Trump administration related to lead. This has been an issue that Administrator Pruitt and now Administrator Wheeler of the Environmental Protection Agency have said is a real priority for the agency. But what we have seen and uncovered is that really the administration has not been doing all that it can and should do on lead in order to protect kids specifically. We know lead is a highly, highly toxic neurotoxin. It impacts IQ, the ability to pay attention in children, and has all sorts of lifelong impacts on children. And there's no safe level of exposure to it. And so really there needs to be some really strong policy actions to make sure that to prevent exposure in the first place. Because, as Gretchen mentioned before, we can't reverse some of the exposure to lead in kids across the country. Then once it occurs, these kids are going to face lifelong challenges, and that's unacceptable. We just can't make that happen. So the administration has taken some steps to protect children in its updates to the lead and copper rule, which regulates lead in drinking water, and did some things that were good, including making sure the child care facilities and schools are tested for lead. That before that wasn't required consistently. And so, but the failures of this administration included the failure to lower the level of lead in drinking water at which the agency is required to step in and take action, which is called the lead action level, which is currently at a level that is much higher than what the CDC considers to be the actionable level for children. So that's one piece. There's also the EPA reduced the number of lead service lines that should be replaced by half. And so that's, when I'm talking about preventing exposure, that's one of the best ways to do it is to really replace the old infrastructure in this country, the lead service lines, which of course is it's an expensive endeavor, but one that is absolutely worth it for the health of our children. And we need more of it, not less, and this administration has cut that out. There are other things that have been done with regard to lead in paint, dust, and soil, which is one of the biggest exposure pathways still in children is from lead paint in older buildings. And the EPA's Inspector General in 2019 had talked about how the agency has failed to really enforce that law that makes sure that inspects and makes sure that children aren't being exposed disproportionately in communities of color and low-income communities. So there's all sorts of ways that this administration could have been better, and so far we've been, the actions that have been taken have not been good enough to protect children's health.
Gretchen, we did a lot of shows about the Flint water crisis and learned a lot about how lead affects children. There's been so much reporting about lead in water in schools. I just did a quick search. Chalkbeat, Tennessee headline from last August. Nearly 100 Tennessee schools found high lead levels in their water. In New York City, August, from the National Resources Defense Council, still high levels of lead in drinking water in New York schools. KTVU, January, lead found in water at 90% of Utah schools. So can you talk about this? Because it's getting a lot of attention. And just talk about, you know, what parents can actually do about this, what communities can do about this.
Absolutely. I think this is something that communities and parents can play a role in. For better or worse, a lot of this happens at the local level and the state level, where parents can demand to make sure that the schools are tested and that local jurisdictions are doing whatever they can to make sure that children are in safe places that don't have lead in their drinking water or other exposures. This is a big problem, and it's actually everywhere. I had our house, our paint tested for lead and our yard soil tested for lead because I knew this was everywhere, and this is something that, you know, not everyone is going to have the ability to do that. But our schools and our local decision makers should be keeping children safe from lead, and it starts there. And I think that's one reason, too, we were so disheartened by the lack of federal action, because we need federal resources on this. You know, not every school district and state is going to have the resources to address all of these issues. And Flint, of course, was a very high-profile example that, and it's the injustice of what happened there is really reprehensible. But there's actually communities across the country that have similar issues too that we also need to be fixing their water as well. And so I think Flint was, should have been the wake-up call that this is something that we need to address to protect all kids.
As you said, your report says the EPA neglected to require the replacement of 6 million water service lines made of lead. The EPA also failed to lower the level of lead in drinking water at which the agency is required to step in and provide enforcement, known as its lead action level. So, Gretchen, what explains this?
Yeah, it's just been a largely of a lack of action, and some of it is around sort of the legal frameworks where we're not requiring there be testing, we're not helping communities and families with resources to test their water. It's a lot of work that needs to be done at the federal level as well as the local level to think about how we can better tackle this widespread problem. I don't know if Jenna has anything to add, but I think it's a very egregious situation.
Well, one thing I would add is, and it's not actually in the report, but a detail of this, I think it cuts to how the Trump administration is failing to listen to science and experts, is that with regard to the lead action level, the administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention actually had a lead poisoning prevention advisory committee, and that advisory committee has been disbanded by the Department of Health and Human Services it wasn't as a result of this, but they did actually recommend to the administration that they reduce that action level to a much lower level to protect kids. And now that committee no longer exists to hold this administration accountable for their recommendations and expert advice. But this is just one piece of this longer, bigger pattern that we've seen out of this administration of cutting science out of the process, failing to listen to the experts. We have the information. We know how to protect kids. It's just a matter of getting it into the decisions that end up trickling down into our communities and have putting in place provisions that really protect us and our kids.
Let's now talk about chlorpyrifos. In the report, it says against the advice of its own scientists, the EPA under the Trump administration scrapped a ban on the pesticide chlorpyrifos, a chemical so harmful that the EPA banned its use in homes in 2000 because of the risks posed to children's health. decades of scientific evidence show that exposure to chlorpyrifos, even at low doses, can inhibit brain development in children. Gretchen, can you give us just a little information about chlorpyrifos, which was derived from a class of chemicals used as nerve agents during World War II?
Yeah, so this is a pesticide that, as you said, has been shown to be harmful. And the broader scientific community, as well as EPA's own scientists, have shown how dangerous this is for children to be exposed. And that's why they banned it from homes a while ago, but it's still in commercial use today. And that has effects on farm workers and anyone living next to fields where it's being applied. And so we still are seeing risks for children now. And despite all of this mountain of evidence, we see this administration choose not to ban it. And, you know, since that decision happened, it was fairly high profile. And so, you know, we've seen other actions be taken by states and by manufacturers and suppliers that have said they won't carry it, they won't use it, they won't allow it to be used. And so we're seeing progress in other ways. But what that says to me is that this is the federal government abdicating their responsibility here, because the EPA should be who's making this decision, and we shouldn't have to be relying on states and companies to do the right thing when the EPA's job is to protect public health. And yet we're seeing these the leaders at EPA make this decision. One factor in that is that before making this decision, the head of the EPA actually met with representatives from DuPont, the chemical company, and who produces chlorpyrifos and other chemicals that would be affected by EPA regulation. And so we're sort of seeing that, you know, it seems that they're prioritizing private interest over the public interest, and that's going to harm health.
According to NPR, this is a pesticide that is often used by growers of grapes, citrus, almonds, and other crops. And in the report, Raul Garcia, an activist from the Central Valley region in California, who works for a community group that advocates for pesticide safety, says parents feel helpless and afraid when pesticides like chlorpyrifos drift into their homes, sometimes fearing their children will be unable to breathe. Can you tell us, Jenna, how exactly this does affect the children of farm workers who are so exposed to this pesticide?
Yeah, so chlorpyrifos is it's another neurotoxin. It impacts children's brains, and this begins in the womb. So there's actually been extensive studies of women while they're pregnant, following them from birth until the child is 6 or 7 years old, and has shown that there's a real drop off in the IQ points of a person after exposure to chlorpyrifos compared with someone who's not. And you know, it's really alarming that something that is completely out of their control and not their fault at all is having such lifelong impacts on children. And these are kids who are, you know, already experiencing, you know, cumulative chemical burden by living near, by either being, you know, children of farm workers or living near fields that are sprayed with not just chlorpyrifos, but all sorts of other insecticides and herbicides. And, you know, it's something that is incredibly troubling. It's also something, as you mentioned, that it's sprayed on on foods and on often fruit crops, specialty crops. And so it's not just farm workers and children of farm workers and people living near fields are exposed, but there's also the exposure on our food. And, you know, it's something that stands to really impact all of us in some way. And the really frustrating thing is, like I said before, we have we know the science. There is a large body of evidence pointing to the risks of exposure to this insecticide, and yet the administration does nothing. And you know, it's just that the thread that we are seeing in this report is this lack, this neglect of science, the lack of action, the lack of enforcement of policies to protect us when we know what is causing problems and how to address those problems.
Jenna, have any other states taken action on this? Again, beginning in early 2020 this year, California is going to ban the sale of chlorpyrifos. According to NPR, the state came up with an agreement reached with Corteva Agriscience, the maker of chlorpyrifos, and they're going to end, they ended the sale of this pesticide last month on February 6th, and agricultural growers will not be allowed to possess or use it after December 31st of this year.
Yeah, that's right. Also, Hawaii has banned it, and New York is actually poised to take regulatory action on it as well. And you're right, Corteva last month did say that they were going to start phasing out the product with absolutely no details on as to why. So it's clear that the public opposition to this has actually forced the maker of the product to phase it out. But the administration has been quiet on this. You know, they're still working on their own assessment of the insecticide. And, you know, it's really important that we... The administration should have been the leader on this and should have been the one kind of setting the threshold for this particular chemical. And there will be, we need to make sure that the replacement chemicals that are being used on these crops as a, you know, as an alternative to chlorpyrifos aren't even more dangerous. And it's hard to have, you know, real faith that this administration will ensure that whatever is replacing chlorpyrifos use is going to be safer for families across the country.
On today's Your Call, we are talking about a new report from the Union of Concerned Scientists called Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. And we're joined today by two scientists, Jenna Reed and Gretchen Goldman. They both work with the Union for Concerned Scientists, and they both are moms. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall at kalw.org. All right, let's try to get through as many others as we can. Let's talk about food safety. According to the report, young children are more susceptible than adults to health complications due to foodborne illnesses. In the United States, the foods most responsible for these illnesses are chicken, beef, pork, and turkey. The Trump administration, however, has enacted two measures with great potential to stress the inspection process that ensures the safety of poultry and pork products. So what concerns you there, Gretchen?
It is very concerning to me. I think this one is because, especially because as a parent, you are very aware of what you're feeding your child. You're trying to get the best foods, making sure they're eating healthy things and vegetables. And this especially shows that, you know, we need the help of decision makers to make sure that what our kids are getting is safe. These are two rules that the administration is trying to push through. One of them would increase line speeds on chicken processing plants. So this is when chicken is produced, it goes down the line and a worker will inspect the chicken and cut it, and they want to increase the speeds at which that happens. And this, of course, makes more money for the producer, but studies have shown that this would increase the likelihood of harmful foodborne illnesses because it's too fast for workers to be able to properly inspect the chickens. And so this is alarming to me, given that children are more susceptible to foodborne illness, and when it hurts, when they get it, it is very risky to children, more so than to adults. And so this is a problem that I think could have big impacts if it goes through.
Jenna, according to the report, these changes will lead to more contaminated products making their way onto store shelves and into the homes of vulnerable children. So what can families do about this?
Right. So this is really one of those challenges with a lot of the issues in this report. You know, as parents, we want to do everything we can to protect our kids, but there's not going to be a stamp on the package of chicken that you get that tells you exactly how it was inspected and what the line speed was when it was inspected. I think it's you know, you have to really get engaged at the policy level and start thinking about why it is that the USDA has decided to privatize inspections and what that means for resulting meat that's coming out of these facilities. And you know, there are ways to get involved in the policy making process in order to stop decisions like this from happening. And I think that's where I would urge parents to get more involved in, because it's, you know, a lot of these things are being flipped through by this administration without listening to its own experts at the agency. And even, you know, there have been several different former inspectors from USDA who've been speaking out about how dangerous this could be for public health, and the administration is just ignoring them. So we need parents to speak up, to talk about how this might impact their families and their purchasing of products, and really to get engaged in the process and think about how these decisions are impacting our lives and why we need to make sure that future decisions are based in the science.
Well, let's take a caller. Let's hear from Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yes. Hi. I have a question on how we would measure lead in our own drinking water at home. I'm a little skeptical of the private water delivery subscription services that do their own measuring for you. And is there a way you recommend we measure for lead? I'm calling about newborns.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. Gretchen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think first, the first thing I'd say is just check if there's any public programs for it. I'm not familiar with what's local to San Francisco, but in DC, they will pay, to have your, water tested. They'll pay for it, the city. If you want sort of a different independent voice, I don't live in DC proper, but I just paid an environmental engineer who does that kind of work, independently to do it. And he, you know, came into the house and looked at the walls and the water and is able to do it. So that's one. If you have the means to do that, and it wasn't tremendously expensive, but it did, of course, cost money. So that's one way that you can do it as well. And, you know, you can also get a copy of your water consumer confidence report, and that should also give you the lead level on it as well.
All right. Thank you. Anything to add, Jenna?
No, I mean, I think it's a good question, because all of us are thinking through how we are directly impacted by some of the policy decisions from this administration. And, you know, I think Gretchen, you know, got it. It's just kind of think about locally who your supplier is and start asking them questions. And there, you know, a lot of this information is required under the Safe Drinking Water Act by EPA. And so the information is available. You know, at least your water supplier should have it. If you have a well, you know, you might have to get that tested separately. But there are definitely resources from your local health department that should be able to help you figure out how to do that.
All right. Thank you. And if you do a search, I just did a quick search, lead testing, and then wherever you live and water, and a number of resources come up. And so far, it doesn't look like it's overwhelming. It looks pretty straightforward. So thank you for that call. And we will definitely continue to focus on these issues. We're almost out of time. A few things we're not going to have time to get to, but we will definitely do shows in the future. Decreased enforcement of the safety of children's products, weakened air pollution protections, restricted access to food security programs, the climate crisis, and children and families detained and separated at the U.S.-Mexico border. We're going to talk about that on tomorrow's show. But Jenna, a lot of this is really overwhelming. And as you said, it's not right to put the pressure on a family to do all of this research themselves. But the fact is, this is where we are. What other precautions should we take? I mean, as a scientist and a mom, what changes have you made in your life?
Yeah, so, you know, we wanted to put this report out and a book that we have, a storybook that went with it, to really get the word out, to arm families, parents, about what it is that this administration is doing and how it's impacting kids and how the administration isn't prioritizing kids' health. And so with that knowledge, hopefully, you know, we have the power to really then mobilize ourselves, mobilize our communities, hold our elected officials accountable for prioritizing children's health, there's all sorts of ways we can get involved in the process. The burden shouldn't be on us. We need help, right? We need the federal government to be looking after our kids, to take care of the things, the bigger things that, you know, we can't change on our own, like the level of particulate matter in our air. There are things that we need the government to help out with, and so we need to continue to hold the government accountable for looking out for us. That really leaves us with getting involved in the decision making process as much as you can, telling everyone you know about the ways in which these decisions impact our kids' health, and we have lots of different resources available on our website from all sorts of organizations that work on these issues every day that have toolkits on individual issues like lead, like asbestos. So I would encourage you to check out our website as well for that resource guide, which has lots of information that will hopefully be helpful for families who want to get more engaged on these issues.
And Gretchen, I know that you have written about how this really disproportionately affects children from communities of color and low-income households. I mean, it's great to say, you know, buy organic as much as you can, try to buy non-toxic products, but for a lot of people, it's really difficult to do that. Did we lose Gretchen?
I'm sorry, I was muted.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah, I'm very bothered by this. And once I became a mom, I also just felt like you sort of see those inequities more, and it bothers me more that other moms don't have the same ability to protect their child, and that's why we need to insist that our decision makers are doing what they can to address these inequities in who has access to healthy childhoods. And it's a big problem that some people are going to be more affected by this, and I want to make sure that that's the case. So I would just echo Jenna's comments and say, if you are also bothered that that there are these justice problems with which children get to grow up healthy, please join us, and you can go to our website at ucsusa.org. And as a parent, you don't need to fret about this, and instead just get plugged in and get informed. There's lots of great organizations and materials to do the work for you, so you don't have to become a chlorpyrifos expert to know how to make a difference. So please join us.
Gretchen Goldman and Jenna Reed are both scientists with the Union for Concerned Scientists. They are also moms. They worked on the new report, Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. Gretchen and Jenna, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show, Jonathan Linden for line producing, and Joanne Marr, our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.